A new Perek Yud. Wow. The truth is, the Prakim now break down totally because it appears that the non-Jewish editors of your misunderstood the marks that Gavriel was telling over to Daniel and took them as being new marot and made each one a Perek. So from this point on, now we're beginning a new thing entirely, and indeed that is clearly in the graphic in the actual ksav of the Ksuvim. But this piece, which is the new and height, really, of what it is that Daniel is active in, is something that continues on really till the end of the Sefer, as we'll see. So up until this time, we had a tremendous change, an amazing movement, in which we find that the takana, really, of a new type of tefillah, which goes all the way back to the Makor of tefillah at the time of Adam Rishon, a vision in which human intelligence has a special kind of job in which it does not necessarily have to be linked when it's not possible to be linked to the mechanics of how things are achieved. And that in a way, this takes us all the way back to Gan Eden itself. And in Gan Eden, the idea of Chemda was central, really, before the Achil of the Eitz Hadaat. And that which led us to the Eitz Hadaat. So we'll see that Chemda here, in terms of the Chamudot of Daniel, but not only that, even in terms of the Lechem, which of course is central to Gan Eden as well, the idea of Chamudot comes up even more powerfully. And something changes here, which is remarkable, because we've already seen the interrelationship of what it is that Daniel did and what it is that Yaakov Avinu did. Both of them were focused on the Mokom HaMikdash. Both of them, as the Medrash points out, they both had a vision of Kates. Both of them were forced to forego or to forget their vision of Kates. Both of them were Metaken Dargas of Tefillah that we hadn't seen before. Dargas of Tefillah were particularly effective. Balaila, which was by Yaakov Avinu and the Tikkun of Arvit. Both of them were involved in him as well. Of course, this is the ultimate Galut. This is the time prior to Ayelet HaShachar. This is the time of the deepest Galut, right before the dawn, as the Gemara points out, the Gabi Esther, that follows this by just a few years. And both of them, remarkably, share also the interrelationship with the Mokom HaMikdash, which is overtly sexual, as we saw not only in the Mokom HaMikdash, that they actually had pictures of coupling humans, and that it was a thing that the Goyim took as being very pornographic and disgusting, and came down on us for, but all of the Ramazim about the nature of the Kodesh HaKodashim being a bedroom, and the Me'il of the Kohen Gadol needing to ring to tell you that you don't walk into a bedroom without ringing, and the Kiva HaShemesh telling you not to sleep with a woman during the daytime, only Yaakov Avinu waited till the night. Many, many Ramazim that we find brought out in the Chadar HaMitot idea in Divrei HaYomim, which we'll get to. And of course we found by Daniel exactly the same idea. The Chamudot is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ta'ava for Tefillatan Shel Tzadikim. And this, as David HaMelech brings out, and the Medrash brings out in terms of Avraham Avinu, this is said in much more overtly sexual ways, because in the Pasuk it says Shim'ibat Ure'i, when it's talking about the nature of Kal Yisrael, this is Bat Nadiv, the child of Avraham Avinu, who was the Rishon to those who were Menadev themselves. So over there we find that in his initial discovery, what it was, as David HaMelech with Meramis later, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu winks at him, as if to say, says the Medrash, V'yetar, this is how David HaMelech puts it, and this is Yaf Yafita Mibnei Adam, this is in Tehillim Mem Hei, the description of what it is to be a Ben Yisrael, who is Osik B'Torah, you're the most beautiful of humans. V'yetar HaMelech Yofyech, may the king desire your beauty. And this is what you have to make yourself. This is the relationship that a person has to Torah and to Tefillah, and it becomes very overt, both in Yaakov Avinu and in Daniel. The next thing that they share, remarkably, it's amazing, works out in this week's parasha. Yaakov Avinu is the only one, really, that we ever found dealing with angels. Not simply dealing with angels in terms of having some kind of vision and so on. But he is actually Sorer, and this is, he's even called Yisrael on that basis. Ki Sarita im Elohim v'iman Hashem Matucha. This was the original way in which Saro shel Esav. Also a new idea. Saro shel Esav. Amazingly, Daniel, who's been taking on this approach of Yaakov Avinu from the beginning, and that's similar also to the Tmimut of Yaakov Avinu, and here Rashi understands this Chamudot and this parak to be different than the Chamudot before, understands it as a sense of whole, Chamud and perfectly clean, because the word is used that way for the kind of bread that he would normally eat, Lechem Chamudot, which means cleaned of all psul. So something that's desirable doesn't have ugliness in it. That idea of, occurred by Yaakov Avinu as well. That was the Shlemus of Yaakov, the Tmimus of Yaakov. And for the first time we met an idea there, not openly in the Pasuk, because it isn't clear who the Ish is, but Vayeyavek Ish Imo, surprisingly, in this parak, an Ish appears without identification. And what's more, open discussions about the idea of Sarim, the Tsar of Paras, and the Tsar of Yavan, and Michael Sarchem in terms of Yisrael. These are things that were just rumors earlier. The only time that we really had a discussion about them in the Torah was in terms of Yaakov Avinu. So again, this is very, very consistent with the period and what it was that they need to be metake. So I think it behooves us just for a moment, because this is going to be so much a theme throughout the from this point on in the book, it's important for us to recognize what exactly is meant by the gestalt of a tsar as opposed to a typical malach. When we talk about a malach, so we understand that a malach, it means exactly what the word means in Hebrew. A malach doesn't mean an angel. A malach means a messenger. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav. Messenger is simply something that carries information. We talk about messenger RNA. It's no different than the malach that is used in the Rakia. It's a gestalt that we look at because they had no concept of information, and so they personified the information. So when we talk about a malach, as Rashi says in many places, the malach only exists in terms of its shlichut. If there's no shlichut, there's no malach. So whatever information it's dealing with, the gestalt of that information is the existence of the malach. And otherwise, it's not there at all. So it's basically a format of carrier, carrying information, which we understand Kabbalistically, the idea of that has to be that in exactly the same way that we understand that wherever you have nested realities, the linkages between them are very, very complex. And the most difficult thing that we have, as we've discussed many times, is defining the laws and modalities of correspondence of information on different levels. The way that the Balei Kabbalah term this is shalshalut. Shalshalut means a chaining. It's exactly the way that we would use it in English. It means from shalshalut is a chain. So there is a chain of cause and effect. We talk about mechanical shalshalut, a chain. We could talk about Feynman diagrams, which is a chain of virtual particles. It's also shalshalut. The idea of malachim is they represent a modality in which it is possible for information from one level of reality to be linked to another. Exactly how? Okay, that's what the study of Kabbalah is about, to get the detail of how exactly is one issue linked to another. It doesn't seem to be connected in any way, which is why we can actually describe Kabbalah in psychological terms, not only in existential terms, in physical terms, in having various midot kiss or make love or be angry or turn aside, and all of which are metaphors on different levels of reality. And obviously everybody understands that there's no such thing as any of those things. They are representations of information. These representations of information are so real to us that we live them. It's just that we call them characters. They could be characters in a novel, and we cry over them, and we know they don't exist. We sit there and we tremble. What is going to happen to a character that doesn't exist? You can't fall asleep. I have to know what happened to what? What are you, crazy? Nothing happened to anybody. But that's not the issue, because if it's well-crafted, then we understand that we are talking about a particular configuration of information that indeed is consistent, might just as well have existed, And in essence, the things that I relate to that do exist are no different. They exist because they're a format of information that I'm able to relate to from the outside because I appreciate the gestalt that's formed by that information, not the reality of the other person. And so because of that, it really makes no difference to me, ultimately, whether I'm talking about a character in a book or I'm talking about a character in the neighborhood. It's the same thing. Truly the same thing. As a matter of fact, it's easier to relate to the character of the book because I get a better insight, a better idea of the fullness of the information that's there. So real is it that the character becomes more powerful than the writer. Because very often, you could have an idea of what you want a character to do in a book, and it won't do it. You can't write the book having the character do that. Because it's not the way the character has evolved. It's inconsistent, it strikes you as being completely unreal, and it's out of character, perfect, exactly. So we do have a very sophisticated ability to create gestalt out of information that's put together by us in very complicated ways. So it's not to be surprised that these particular ideas of Malachim taking on format, physical format, to the human being, even though we understand there's no real physical format, that is no different than a character in a book taking on a physical format. Same thing is true, we'll actually create a movie out of it. And in the movie, very interesting, surprisingly, these very far-fetched characters that Daniel sees is actually very common to see in a movie. In other words, we will imagine these super powerful, I don't know the names of these weird movies, but you have these cyber people, and they've got these pure blue stone looks and the flashing eyes and so on and so forth. So even the mythological elements that we attach to it are still very, very powerful. Part of a great number of, particularly in the East, a great number of Japanese comic books or movies and so on. Exactly these types of gestalt, because they speak to us in very primal ways, carrying exactly that type of visible information, and we understand what they stand for. Maybe not consciously, but it talks to us instantly. This is what they stand for. There is a different level, however, and that's called a sar. A sar is not a carrier of information. A sar, fascinatingly, represents the idea of malchut in a completely informational sense. Remember, the truth is that malchut, this is Richie's brain, we started while you were away, yeah, and we started squeezing it. So that even when you just get off of a plane, you can feel those, hey, oh, ow. So if you don't want a headache, I could squeeze this brain really tight. So remember, when we talk about a malchut, okay, we don't ever mean the king, right? To the extent that the Gemara even says the queen of Sheba, there's no queen of Sheba. Malkat Shva means the sense of the kingdom, the emergent quality that you're calling Malka. It's not like a person. Now, what that means is the same thing is true about Asar. In reality, a king simply represents, if he's a real king, by the way, it's true even of the presidency. A president who's capable of representing something about the way in which a nation thinks about itself is very capable as president, even though he's a total idiot. So he could be a movie actor, and he's a great president because he represents something that everybody can relate to and see themselves. Yes, that is what America is about. On the other hand, he might be intelligent and have ideas and be a total, complete washout as a president because he's just a lawyer trying to run a country, which has nothing to do with the concept of the malchut at all. So it becomes a violation, an ugly violation, of the nature of what a malchut is supposed to be. This is even a president, halachat kama v'kama, when you're talking about a true representation of a nation. And that's why we can count the styles. So we'll talk about Louis the 15th. Does that mean everybody's copying Louis? On the contrary. It means that Louis is expressing the way in which people like to see themselves into relating. What's that? Right. Yes, I am the state. That's just, in a much deeper way, as the Tzar puts it, Let le migar mei klum. There's nothing that's his at all. It's as if he doesn't exist. He is a manifestation of the total information that he expresses, and he gives it a human face. A sar is that information without a human face. Simple as that. So if you're talking about the nation as an organism that it has indeed self-organized into a viable, living, capable of providing for itself, who the president is or who the king is to a great extent irrelevant. It's just an expression of the sar. That's all. It's the expression of the sar in the sky. In other words, a pure, unlinked to physicality information. And this will be what comes out of a civilization. So 1,000 years later, everybody looks at the civilization as they would look at a sar. They don't look at anything particularly real. They look at, they even call it by the name of the civilization, and no longer by the name of the people that were there, the kings that were there, other than to study the history of it. But in the mind, it becomes an icon. And it's an icon just like there's an icon to a character. There's an icon to a country. There's an icon to a culture, and so on and so forth. These sarim that we talk about over here, therefore, are immensely powerful in the sense of being truly conglomerations of all of the complexities as they become organized into a totality. Therefore, they as a gestalt are a much more powerful gestalt than a simple carrier of information or a messenger. They're much more than a messenger. It's because of that that the hitmodedut, the way in which you measure yourself and your success, in a very profound sense, in very practical ways, the hitmodedut is a hitmodedut of information. It's not hitmodedut. Even in simple geopolitical terms, hitmodedut, the competition between societies, is not really a competition that boils down to the abilities in war or the economic abilities. It's a complex expression of the power of the culture to envision itself and the way in which it interacts with the world. The economy develops because of that. The military prowess develops because of that. The sense of the morale of the people, that which empowers them, which gives them the sense of they're going somewhere, they can achieve something, is far more powerful than any type of physical thing that could be. Physical comes right out of that. And the decline of empires, the collapse of civilization, is directly linked to the collapse of that vision. It's far more a question of the way in which the information is organized than it is about the way in which it happens to express itself in mechanical terms. And it's remarkable we have arrived at a stage in human history where that is so clear, because we almost obscenely are concerned with the way that we're perceived more than we're concerned with what we're capable of doing. So you may have all the power in the world, but it's completely useless. You could blow up all your enemies with the touch of a button, but your enemies are more powerful than you because they're in the New York Times and you are in the Jewish Observer. All right, the Rocky Mountain News. But in any event, what we find for the first time is that in the same way, by the way, this is expressed right now also in mythological terms, and in the way that Luke Skywalker has to confront himself, so that it's always ultimately a confrontation with yourself. And oftentimes the things that you're looking at are your own subconscious ruination, and that's what you need to deal with. It's not as much the other, it's in the way that you don't know yourself. So when Yisrael, or Yaakov Avinu, has to deal with Saro Shel Esav, that is an interaction that has to do with tates. Because the end story about Akeva Shel Esav has to be incorporated in his vision of himself. If he's able at this point to be the Bechor in that interaction, now he could turn around and enter into what we call reality, meet up with a physical Esav, who's a small part of what will be growing out of him himself over a period of millennia, and deal with those issues from the point of view of a perspective of what it's really about. The first stage of that was the idea of the Migdash. the concept of tefillah, the way in which you begin to feel that it makes a difference, how you perceive things, how you articulate things, and how you relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with those perceptions. So now you form reality, at least in terms of your relationship with the source of existence. And that has massive impact, just as it does even in physics. It has massive impact. The way in which you set up the experiment has massive impact on the results of the experiment. But there's a deeper step, and that deeper step is where the idea of the gestalt itself, the tsar, is actually run by you. And it's an interesting science fiction book, which calls it Ender's Game. I don't know if anybody remembers. That's very popular. All right. So over there you have this kid is meant to be kept in the dark about what he's really doing. And he's supposedly playing games that are just war games that are going to be, maybe they'll get the information of how to, and he has to believe that he's playing, because otherwise he'll start taking himself seriously. But it comes out that those games are actually the basis of the strategy in an intergalactic war, and so on and so forth. Right? So now, in a way, this is what happens in Daniel. He initially felt that what he's doing is what we say, praying, you know. So he'll ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go and to do something about this, to change the Gezerah and the Rakia. But there's nothing that you can do about it in terms of, what are you going to do? He doesn't have any guided missiles. He doesn't have an army. He doesn't have a TV station. He's basically left with nothing but thinking and articulating those thoughts. In this parak, he becomes, as Yaakov became, capable of struggle with a gestalt that was beyond himself. So that even when Yaakov Avinu was given the name of Yisrael, as the Zohar puts it, it's not that he personally was really called Yisrael, but he was a manifestation of that gestalt which is Yisrael. So as the Zohar puts it, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him in the end, Yisrael will be your name, says the Zohar, I just spoke to Yisrael about this, and he says it's okay to give you the name. So we understand throughout the story, from the end, the switchbacks for the personality of Yaakov and entering the personality of Yisrael, and obviously a different state of mentality in which in one you don't know what's going on in the other. And that what we're talking about, again, is higher and level, lower nested levels of an identification, which has its simple physical presence, but which a person can use if he's able to, and if he's clear enough about what he is, he can use to enable a robot that will express the ideas that he is actually generating. So you can generate the gestalt of the tsar. What happens to Daniel here is that he suddenly finds out that it's not about asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do something. It's about his achieving these things. And that the nature of tefillah, as we've always said, is lehit palel, is changing yourself. It's reflexive. But that lehit palel makes changes in you which enable the balance of forces, which are cultural balances of forces. He's worried about what's going to happen to Paras. How long is this going to go on? Will they be able to prevent the building of the Beit HaMikdash, as happens in Ezra and Nehemiah, and there's this delay after the Koresh proclamation and so on? He wants to deal with that. And he discovers, through Daniel, who now becomes the one who we saw before, is a remarkable playoff on Daniel himself. Gavriel is Daniel. Daniel, in terms of the Gvura, he becomes the Ish, as he's the Ish Hamudot. He's called the Gever initially, which Gever, and then he's Gavriel, and this is what the din is. So he becomes now capable of influencing what is actually going on by virtue of his own achievements and his own vision. And this, we saw before, was Merumas in the original Pasuk, where at the end of the Mar'eh, he says, look, I really had a hard time getting myself together. But when I realized that I have to do something, the Melechet HaMelech, I was able to pull it off. Now, the Medrash takes that, and this is a psikta. The psikta takes that as really being the beginning of a commitment to actually change things by becoming so aware and so capable of interacting with what it meant to be Yisrael and what it would mean to be a Persian and so on and so forth, that he ultimately gains abilities to really manipulate the screen, so to speak, with his mind. And this happens through Daniel in this parsha, just like Yaakov Avinu was capable of actually fighting. Obviously, we talk about it metaphorically, you know, the dust was raised up to the Shamayim. I mean, but we understand that, as the Zohar puts it, it was an immense mental warfare in which there were parries and attacks and counterattacks and so on, based on, and what would you do with this and what would you do with that and so on. That's a lightsaber, not a nuclear weapon. So what the Psikta says is that the Pasik, Chazita Ish Mahir Bimlachto, Lifnei Melachim Yityatsev, Baal Yityatsev Lifnei Baaleyav. You see a man that can do his job well, he's going to end up standing in front of kings. Who is this? This is Daniel. Why is this Daniel? And it brings the Pasik before at the end of Barakat, after that vision. Because Daniel said, Va'akum, V'eset Melechet HaMelech. Amar lo HaMelech, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Great. Nizdarasta b'melachtecha. You've become now diligent and powerful in your work. Well, you used to be a low-class kind of guy who was Yoshevu Meshamer Sha'arei Basar V'dam. You were doing the king's work. What kind of crummy kings are that? Now we're going to give you some serious work. So now, as it says, for the Neobatir Malka, remember, he was standing at the door of the king. That's a low class with name Elachim Yityatsev. Now you're going to be doing the real work. And the Psikta, amazingly, traces, I don't think that it means seriously to trace Daniel as being Sheshbatzar. We'll see later on that this is the name of the individual who is active in getting the Beit HaMikdash built. But here it identifies, and this is in Ezra, but here it actually identifies Daniel as Sheshbatzar. Why Sheshbatzar? Because he had six different sarot. So Sheshbatzar. So it talks about his being thrown into the Gov Arayot, his being involved in saving Kanani Mishava Zayah Mikiv Shana Esh, his needing to explain the dream, and then they wanted to kill him. And he was involved in Galut Yoyakim, and he was involved in Galut Yoyachin, and he was involved in the Galut of Tzidkiyahu. So, who was that? Look at that. Okay, so, but what this means is that the Medrash views Daniel as being the man behind the curtain. So in other words, he is the mover of the physical movement that happens in Yerushalayim, in the politics of it, and becomes the mover in front of the king, so to speak, in the Shamayim, which is another very important part of this whole perek, and that is the concept of a pamalia shalmal, in which the various organisms vie for the approval of the heavenly court. We've seen this. We've seen it in Iyov, and we saw it in Michayu, who's talking about his vision of who was going to go out and in the end it becomes the Ruach Navot, who goes out and destroys Achav. And there's a few places where we see that Nevi'im talk about this thing. And it really is the ultimate video game, in a sense. In other words, you're attempting to manipulate with your mind. These Sarim now are manipulating each other on the highest level, fighting with each other to, in the end, win on earth as well. Because, as I said, the idea is ultimately what wins it. It's amazing. If you read the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, it's astonishing. He credits his entire success in life to taking this pasuk seriously. And the reason that he took this pasuk seriously is he said that his father used to wake him up every morning with this pasuk. And he would tell him, his father would yell at him, listen here, Ben, Chazita Ish Meir Ben Lach Tal Lefnei Melachim Yityatsev. Baal Yityatsev Lefnei Baal Yavin. We know how much that Meir Ben Lach Tal was central to Benjamin Franklin. You know, the idea of getting things done and being able to do anything and not to be worried about anything. And he ends the story by saying, and would you believe it, that a Shmo like me ended up actually being the Shliach to four different Melachim. How did that happen? For sure it happened because of this pasuk. You know, and because of that, he became involved in the formation and the formative ideas of what it meant to create a new society. And this was part of what they were doing, was a real understanding. That's why they were all able to speak Lashon HaKodesh. It was a desire to actually make use of the issues that were given over in Torah and to take them seriously and do something with them. And that idea of we're going places and we're doing things was truly part of the building of the United States. And so, in this parak, we're talking about a Daniel who is lifnei melachim mityatzev. A Daniel who, for all of his fears and for all of his physical limitations, he's strongly dimensionally challenged, as are the rest of us. We want to say it politely, so it's just dimensionally challenged. We don't want to say that we're crippled by time and space. We're dimensionally challenged. So he too was very, very dimensionally challenged, all of us living in this hospital. And you know, we can, I think here we can speak openly about it. We're all in the same boat.
All we have to do is pad the walls.
Believe me, they are well padded. You can't do a darn thing. You can't get out of here. No. There's nothing to do. So we will discuss tomorrow the beginnings of Daniel's new lease on life. Bishnat shalosh lechoresh melech paras. Davar niglat leDaniel leshivikra shemo Belshazzar. So it was in the third year of Koresh, the king of Paras, which means that it was already after the Koresh declaration. We've jumped ahead now, because the original Mar'eh was still in that year of Dariavesh, who was Koresh's father-in-law. And the Koresh declaration took place in the first year. We don't have exact information as to when he changed his mind, but it must have been in the second year, probably no longer. And Daniel understood that it's going to be a while for the actual binyan to be done, because after all, he was told before, as we learned at the time when he was given the Pirush of the Mara, that things have multiple level of interpretations, and we don't really know. The Shivim was only, from the time of the beginning of Bava, was only Lepikida B'Yalma. Because of your tefillot, we're ready to be mafarish, that at the end of the Shivim from Bavot Yerushalayim, that there should be an actual binyan. But it was certainly not in the cards. So what happened is that he had now something that was exposed to him. And we see that in the context of what he describes afterwards, that it's because of his awareness of the dangers to the ultimate hashlam of the Beit HaMikdash, because the process began and then was stopped in the middle because of political machinations, which we're going to read about when we get to Ezra. And so Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, which is now very strange, why are we mentioning that when we're already at the time of Koresh Melech Paras? The Belshazzar was the Babylonian name that had been given to Daniel. Let's take a look. Ve'emet ha'davar. And he was reassured now that the things that he was being told, despite the fact that they were so confusing, are definitely worth taking very seriously. We saw this before with the Erev Avoker, that the Malach warns him, even though that sounds like a contradiction, it's meant to be analyzed, you better figure out what it means. Ve'emet ha'davar. Ve'tzava gadol. Now, tzava gadol, Rashi has a very interesting verse where he brings the word tzava is sometimes used as time. So there's a massive army of time, so to speak, of moments that will pass between this discussion and the time when these things actually happen. But Chazal don't view it that way. The Medrash says that ve'emet ha'davar ve'tzava gadol is linked together. That when do we say emet ha'davar, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decrees are signed, sealed, and delivered, and 100% reliable to actually take place on earth, because we know that things can change? Only when it's b'tzava gadol. But tzava gadol means when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emet, it's where he is mityaetz with the tzava gadol, meaning where he does things bebeit dino. Now remember that this is almost a sign to us that we're talking once again about the Adam issue. Because the one thing that we have in Maaseh Bereshit, Maaseh Adam Mitzameinu, that makes the first reference, and just about the only reference early in the Torah, to the fact that there's somebody that God talks to, is that Naaseh, which is the Lashon Rabim. So this is something of a tip-off that we're still in the sugya of Daniel being the Adam, looked at as the Ben Adam, and the issues of Geula going back to the things that have to be defined by Tzava Gadol. And therefore, when the Medrash talks about Hashem Elohim Emet, which is the reason, and by the way, we say Emet without Hefsek immediately after Kriyat Shema, another word Emet doesn't appear in Kriyat Shema. So that itself is a reference to here. Because as Chazal say, when is Hashem Elokim Emet? Only when it's Bitzavah Gadol. Which would explain why it's linked to Kriyat Shema, because as we saw, the entire idea over here of there being a process, Hashem, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, as Rashi says, Hashem Shu Elokeinu Achshav, meaning that right now we have a localized vision of God, and it's something that we Jews share in, but hope to bring about Hashem Echad, the different Gilui of Hashem, which will be in Ogea, all of the world, the universal HaKorah, and that is linked to Hashem Elokim Emet, that ultimately is the purpose in terms of humankind. That's why he's being warned over here, according to the Medrash, Emet Adavar, because this has been discussed with Tzavah Gadol. And because of that, as I mentioned earlier in the introduction to the Perek, the entire Perek is really a description of what is happening in the Tzavah Gadol. It's all about this vision that we find in very few other places. One of the most dramatic is the beginning of Yov, when we have a description of the Beit Din Shamala sitting, or the Michayos vision of the destruction of Achav, when there's arguments about who's going to be active in this and so on, and the Ruach that was Mate'e the Nevi'im and so on. But this is one of the places where it actually introduces the idea with this word, Tzavah Gadol. That's why I think it's very important not to take Rashi's approach here, meaning that it's Lizman Aroch, and to recognize, I mean, not that it's a contradiction, obviously, because it's a Vagado, takes place on a cosmic scale, so it's okay to learn that. But the important thing to us is that he's supposed to understand, Daniel, that what it is that he's going to be seeing is a description of the Beit Din Shamala, Pamalia, Shalakarish Baruch Hu, as if he's the inner cabinet. Uvina Tadavar, and so you must. He's told, Vina Tadavar, understand the things. And this is what I needed to do. Uvina lo b'mar, and most of them, this is a word to the Malach, that's a verb. In other words, and I was told to see to it that he understands with a vision. Now the Malach points out these are two separate things, because before we had Davar, which was just the words of the Malach, he didn't have a vision. Then we have the Gavriel sent to Trent to allow him to see something. Michael didn't see anything. So as he said, I just heard a Davar, or something speaking. This could be a reference also we had before, where he was told to talk about the Davar, which might be the Davar to Yirmiyahu, but maybe it was the Davar of that Mar'eh. In other words, the non-visual elements of the Mar'eh, the conceptual elements of the Mar'eh, and to also Bina B'Mar'eh. It's interesting, there's a Medrash that actually traces that there are seven different daragot of filtering of a vision because of the way in which Daniel, we have Mar'eh showing up seven times. So that each one of these is seen as one being a lower level of Ishtalshalut of the other one, so that the Darga of the Mar'ed that Daniel has is just that level, filtered through seven different filters. So he's getting a very vague sense in his own terms of what's trying to be conveyed to him, which is, you know, the way which we would try to communicate with a child, basically. So you scale down what it is that you're saying, you try to figure out what would be understandable from the child's point of view, put it into the child's words, and we understand that. There's an idea that it's been given across, but no matter what you'll do, he's not really going to understand exactly what you're saying, but at least there'll be a sense of what you're saying. Say, Bayamim Ahim, Ani Daniel Hayiti Mitabel Shlosha Shivuim Yamim. This is remarkable, of course, because that's the time of Avelut that we have as Klal Yisrael. This is the 3 weeks. It's the only time that's referenced to such a concept. There's 3 weeks of Avelut, and that relates directly to the Churban, the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And even what he describes took place in those 3 weeks were the things that we do during the 9 days. So lechem chamudot lo achalti, ubasar v'yayin lo ba'alpi, v'soch lo sachti. During that entire period, so we understand that Lashon HaMitabel means that this was his response to be very much like Rav Tzadok, who fasted for 40 years because of the vision that he had of the approaching of the Churban and to try to prevent the Churban and so on. Here, Daniel took upon himself basically to fast, which means literally to fast during the day completely and only to eat at night, or the fast consists of the fact that lechem chamudot lo achalti, or it means during the period of those 3 weeks, which Rashi learns means 3 periods of years a week, that was 21 years, and that during that entire period, that's like Rav Tzadok, it was very often that he fasted. I mean, obviously he didn't fast the entire time, but that is whenever he could fast, he fasted. But that entire period was a period of avelut for him. There's different perushim in the Mefarshim. So if it's limited only to the lechem chamadot lo achalti. I didn't eat very high quality bread. I didn't eat meat. I didn't eat wine. I didn't do sicha, which would be connected to Tisha B'Av itself, until the 21 years, as Rashi learns, was complete. Now, whether it's literally 21 years or whether it's 3 weeks that are supposed to be meramis to 21 years, which is 3 weeks because of 21 years, but clearly the 21 years are very important, as we're going to see that these are actually 21 years for a very simple reason. If you take a look at the time of the Koresh declaration until the time of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, so fine, it was 18 years, really, that we understood, because it was the Churvot Yerushalayim. As we saw, the difference between Churvot Yerushalayim and the Shivim Shana of Bava was 18 years. That was the amount of time that Tzidkiyahu was king for 11 years, and that the earlier Galut, before the Churban, had gone out in order to prepare the way with the Harash and the Masgir and so on. It's a total of 18 years. But it took 3 years for the completion of the bias. It was in the Shana of Revias, as we'll see when we get to Ezra Nehemiah, that it was completed. And it's very possible that, in fact, Daniel was mitabel until he actually saw the bayit finished. Because what was the point of thinking that, oh, now Dayovish has commanded, that the second Dayovish, of course, has commanded that we're going to build a bayit. He already saw Koresh do that and nothing came of it. So he certainly wasn't going to take it for granted that there was a bias, especially after he had been shown that there were so many levels of interpretation and that it was easy to wreck the very delicate thread that would allow for a very low quality bayit to be there just as a trial run to see if we could handle it, we could do anything differently than had been done initially and get over the crazy hang-ups that were causing us all of this aggravation. And of course, as we know, I mean, again, from the historical perspective, it all seems very silly. I mean, we just never, ever change. That's what it seems like. And that is really what the Rambam brings out so powerfully in Hilchot Ta'aniyot, that the main point of these Ta'aniyot, these Kavua Ta'aniyot, 3 weeks, Shivasa B'Tamuz and Tisha B'Av, is not like other Ta'aniyot, to change the Gezeirah Ra and to be Ma'irah. It's to actually achieve what Daniel had attempted to achieve, which is, if you recall, the whole thing stick from beginning to end. And what he recognized was very on an earlier stage, in which it was hard for him to imagine that this could possibly go on for thousands of years. I mean, he probably imagined that it would be different problems, new problems, and so on. But in reality, as the Rambam puts it, it's exactly the same problems. They just reappear in more sophisticated form. So what he says is, it's exactly the same approaches that has caused all of the problems for generation after generation. And this is what we're supposed to realize, that in these historical fests, we go all the way back to the beginning of the historical events that created these fests, to show that nothing has changed. Unless you're willing to not think about the problems in local terms, and you're willing to undertake to recognize that it's got to be a pattern of problems, you won't be able to do anything about it. And so it always looks like things are changing, and locally things appear very, very different. But from an overall historical perspective, those, of course, who are unable to learn from it are doomed to repeat it. And it's only the patterns of history, as T.S. Eliot points out, that are really, those are the things that make any kind of impact on us. So that it's very important to trace back the 3 weeks, really, to Daniel. And we're going to see that those 21 years actually was a period in which things were very up in the air in the Shemayim, so to speak. So the question is, was Paras going to be given over complete shilton over Eretz Yisrael? And they wanted to have that shilton. Or was there a chance that Daniel, as we said yesterday, through Gavriel, would be able to make a difference? And therefore, the first thing that happens here is, first, the announcement that it's Tzevah Gadol, and secondly, the announcement by Gavriel to Daniel that it's only because of him, Daniel, that he, Gavriel, was successful, which is utterly shocking. So, of course, the Gemara puts it in very simple terms, but let's take a look at what happened. So these 21 years now, according to Rashi, he's in the middle of feeling the pain, in which he's terrified that there won't even be this temporary relief of a 420-year Beit HaMikdash. And so it was beyond Esrim V'Arba'a, L'Chodesh HaRishon, V'Ani Hayiti Ayad HaNahar HaGadol Hu Chidakya. So there I was on the 24th day of the first month, and I was standing by the great river, the Chidakya. Now, the problem is that the Har HaGadol and the Gemara is Prat. And this, of course, we learn that from the Pasuk, and that's because it's why it's called Gadol, because it's Eretz Yisrael, essentially. So it may just be that this is relative. That was before we had this little, the Ulai River, you know. I mean, whoever heard of that? This one takes place in a very serious river. So he's saying, compared to that, we really have the goddess of the Chidakah. V'esar et einai, I lift up my eyes. V'erev inei ish echad lavush badim. I see this vision of what appears to be a human of some kind, who is dressed in white bod. Now, of course, that is exactly what the Aveda is done with, and that is the Aveda of the Kohen. So maybe he's Lavush Badim. We see the Lavush Badim comes up many times in the context of Gula. So he's dressed in these white clothes. Umotnav chagurim bechetem ufaz. He has a belt that is made out of gold. Now, a chetem means that the gold itself has within it all types of valuable stones that are embedded in the gold. And so it's like a stained gold. So there's this beautiful, beautiful clothing. Ugviyato ketarshish. Now, his body itself seems to be made out of a tarshish stone. And that's, according to most, it's a very blue stone, maybe a sapphire, but it's a very, very valuable blue stone. Ufanav kemarev arak. His face appears to be made out of light. Ve'enav kelapidei esh, embedded with eyes that are glowing sockets. So this is like a very modern kind of gestalt, actually, if you think about it, like a lot of it. Uzrotav u'margalotav ke'en nechoshet kalal. And his hands and feet seem to be made out of his highly polished, his burnished copper. Ve'kol devarava, when he speaks, it sounds like a multitude. Ke'kol hamon. Ra'iti ani Daniel levadi et hamar'eh. And I am the only one that is able to see this thing. There's people that are with me. Anashim asher hayu imi lo ra'u et hamar'eh. Now, the Gemara identifies the people, even though b'parshas you would think anashim asher hayu imi, the only people that we know that Daniel had any connection to were Hanani, Mishael, v'Azariah. But the problem is that Hanani, Mishael, v'Azariah seem to have otherwise disappeared from here. And what's more, it isn't clear why they would have been sensitive to the Mara. So, as we'll see. So Chazal say that actually the Anashim Asher Hayuimi were Nevi'im. And that he had enlisted Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, who were the Nevi'im that had connection to the vision of the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt and so on. They were with him. And so apparently they were all being Osik together, just like we find that Shmuel and David were Osik Benayot, Benayot Shalolam, at a time when things looked very bleak. And they didn't see anything, but Charada Gidola Nafla Aleihem, they were seized with terror. Vayivrchu Be'echavei, and they ran to hide. They just felt something horrible was about to happen. And this is, as the Gemara says, a person sometimes has a sense of anxiety or even terror. And that person should take that seriously, because even though he may not be sufficiently aware to recognize what it is that's going on, but as we put it, Mazalo is aware. In other words, again, the same way that we have all of these constructs that we talk about as Malachim or as Sarim, a human being also has that idea of his entirety, which is more sensitive on a subconscious level than the things that he thinks about. And this, of course, is very common in people. Vani nish'arti levadi, and so there I was left alone. I see this, and I'm just like, oh God. And I can't even stand up. I mean, I think I looked pretty good before, but I looked a wreck. I could not keep myself together. And I hear this thing talking. I just lose consciousness. When I hear it talking, I just fall asleep on my face, facing down on the ground. Vine yad nag abi, a hand touches me, vatani'eni, and shakes me up onto my hands and knees. Vatani'eni al birkai v'kapot yadai, so there I am in almost a fetal position, bent over, like I'm crawling. Vayomer elai, he says to me, Daniel, sweetheart, don't worry about it. Daniel ish chamudot, havin b'dvarim asher anochi dover alecha. You're going to have to concentrate and understand as much as you can what I'm going to talk to you. Stand up, will you please? Amod alam techa. Ki ata shulachte alecha. Right now I've been sent to talk to you. Uvedabroi me at adavar hazeh, when he said that to me, amadati, I was able to stand, but I was trembling. Vayomer elai al tira, Daniel. You really don't have a sense at all of your place in all of this. If you would, see, he actually says this in the end. If you would, you wouldn't be sitting here trembling like this. Ki min hayom harishon asher natata et lipcha lahavin ulehitanot lifnei Elohecha nishmu dvarecha. The Gemara has an amazing maaseh that paskins halakha l'maaseh from this story, which is that the Romans had been gozer against asifot of tefillah and so on and so forth. Nonetheless, the chachamim were gozer at tanit, that they wouldn't be able to
that until after the gezerah would be mitbatel. So they, well, what's the point? He said, take a look at what the pasuk says. Min ha'yomer shana shenatata et lipcha lavina litanot. From the time that you had taken upon yourself to work on this, to understand and to fast, already nishmu dvarecha. That means before it even happened. So that means that the truth is, the inyanim that I'm about to tell you are already years old, because it's from the time that you understood that something needs to be done. And that was already from the end of Dariovish, just as Koresh was about to become king. As we saw, that's why it's 21 years. So it makes a great deal of sense, as Rashi says it. Now, Gavriel's words to Daniel are not limited by time-space, obviously. Because to him, he's not, he couldn't care less where Daniel is. He's talking to Daniel from his own point of view, in which these 21 years are already over. But he wants him to know that from that first moment, actually, in the Shamayim, your words were taken very seriously. V'ani bati bidvarecha. And because of your, the portion of meaning of this is that because of the fact that it was so important for you to understand, I was sent in order to be an interpreter of the visions that you had earlier had and help you to recognize what it is that you need to do because of them and so on. However, Chazal see this as being very connected to the entire history that we find from the other Nevi'im of what was going on during this period of the full 21 years. Because as we're going to see, Gavriel explains to Daniel that there is a massive issue with the Sar of Paras. We had discussed yesterday what a Sar means of the Umot. And when it says, Ani batid vidvarecha, what this means is, says the Gemara, it's a reference to Yechezkel. What had happened was that Yechezkel was shown this vision, in which he sees Shivim Ish Bizikne Beit Yisrael, and even has names of who he saw there, including Ya'azanyahu ben Shafan. They're sitting there in the chatzar of the Beit HaMikdash, each one holding a ketoret. V'atar anan ha-ketoret ole. And then v'ayaveoti al chatzar Beit Hashem ha-plimit. And there is the opening of the Echel Hashem, between the Ulam and Mizbeach. There's another 25 people facing the rising sun and looking away from the Echel. So it's achoreyem al Echel Hashem, ufneyem kedma. And there they are bowing down to the sun. So the Gemara says, well, obviously, if they're bowing down to the sun, then they have to be facing away from the Echel Hashem. So when it says, Achareim Kema, means their rear ends were clapping the Echel Hashem, and they were mooning the Beis HaMikdash. That's the level of bizoyen. Fine. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMichael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls that Michael, who we saw before, Daniel was unable to really comprehend and only could get some sensible words. Sarcha umatecha. Your people stink. And that's we'll see. Michael is viewed as the Tsar of Yisrael, which doesn't mean the same thing as the other Tsarim in terms of power, but represents Yisrael Amala. Amala fanavri manoshel olam. But I mean, there's plenty of good people, isn't there? I mean, Dayam letovim shabem. Like, okay, but what about the tzaddikim? I'm going to get rid of all of them. So, vayomer ela ish levush habadim. Now, this is, as we see over here, this is Daniel. Gavriel. So, Gavriel is then commanded to go al beinot legalgal al tachat lekruv malechof dechagach alayish mibonet lekruvim uzrok alayir. So he is told to figuratively destroy Yerushalayim by taking the fire from under the Merkava and destroying the city, throwing it on the city. So vishlach akruvit yadol b'menot lekruvim ela esh asher b'menot akruvim vayisav vayiten el chofnei levush abadim. So he gives, the kruv gives these burning coals into the palms of the one who's levush abadim. He takes it and he goes out. And the point is that what happened is that there was two stages over here which allowed the gecholim to cool. Il malei lo nitztanenu gecholim miyador shel Michael yador shel Gavriel. So bichlal there wouldn't have been any hope. Comes along now, Daniel, and claims, Hinei Aish Levush Abadim, Asher Akeset B'Motnav, this was him in the gestalt of architect and so on, as he appeared to Yechezkel. So here he was carrying a laser measurement rod and so on, okay. But in any event, so he comes in, and he says, Asiti K'chol Asher Tzivitani. I did everything that I was commanded. Says Rabbi Yochanan, at that point they took Gavriel, threw him out, took him behind the curtain, and they gave him 60 pulses of the Nura, so 60 light pulses, as a punishment. Ah, chutzpah. I mean, to lie. You didn't do it. You let it cool off. So if you didn't do it, you didn't do it. Okay, maybe we would have learned, you know, in the Besdin that you didn't want to do something that you knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't really want to do, whatever. And if you're going to do it, so you should have done it right. I mean, you would have just said, I can't be the one that's the agent. Okay, that's understandable. To do something, you don't do it right, and then if you do it, so you should have come back and said you did it right when you're basically saying you did it wrong. In Meshivina Kalkala, what are you coming back for? Bechlau, you shouldn't have said you did it. And so at that point, Dubiel was, of course, Domeladov, which is a simon to the Persian. So they take him and they put him in the place now, Michael up above, and he's there for 21 days, which is connected to this period. It says the Gemara, Hainu Dechtiv, Visar Malchut Paraso, and so comes along now. So all of these horrible things are being given over to Paras during this time. And they ask for the rights over Klal Yisrael, Kitfu Yisrael Becharga. They write it, and then he says, I want the Talmidei Chachamim written. They write him that also. And as it's about to be signed, says the Gemara, Gavriel, who is Me'achrei HaParvod now, because he's been beaten up, so he says, Shov lechem mashkim ekum me'achrei shevet ochrei lochei lechem ha'atzavim, ken yiten li yididon shina. So this is, oh, all you guys getting up early, trying to make your money, staying up, playing the stock market in Tokyo, sitting there eating the bread of misery. Oh yes, wait till you see the way his lover will be given all the good stuff. Meaning, even the nishehem shel tamid chachamim that have to go without sleep in olam hazeh. Zochot le olam haba. So, I mean, it's a pasuk they figured, Kadosh Baruch Hu will listen to that. Lash kabeh. Didn't pay any attention to him. So then Gabriel says, Ribono shel olam, if you took all of the chachomim of all of the nations, you put them into a scale, and you just took Daniel Ishkamudot on the other side, wouldn't that be better? Wouldn't he be better than all of them? The Kadosh Baruch Hu says, who's the voice behind the curtain saying all those good things? Call him in. So they call him in. So that's why Gavriel says to Daniel, you see, it's all because of you. Sani bati bitvarech, which of course in the deepest sense means, as we spoke about yesterday, that the truth is that the Tsar is only capable of acting in terms of whatever is emerging from the concerns that he represents. It's just a indication and a creation of those relationships. So that's why he's going to say in the end to Daniel, he says, this is so cute. He says to Daniel, so now you know I'm here. He doesn't explain it. He says, now you understand why I'm here. So this is the opening. This is the key. He's trying to explain to Daniel, you're not a bystander, that you just need to understand things that are too big for you. Is that really true? Of course it's true that you don't understand what I'm talking about, but that's only because you don't understand yourself yet. That's really what it's about. But you are more important, a player in this, than all these big things going on. This is a major theme throughout the Nefesh HaChayim, Rebbe Chaim Volozhiner, is the analysis of the Madrega of a Malach versus the Madrega of an Adam. Again, he puts it in rather childish terms. I guess that's the language that's available. But basically the way he puts it is that whatever the Darga of a Malach is, a Malach is nothing but express information as given. Can't do anything. There's no impact of a malach on anything unless he represents a particular shlichut. A human being does things. That's what's so unique about a human being. You're dealing with things that appear to be meaningless because you have no idea of how it is that those meaningless things are really connected in very important ways with things that have massive implications, very much as we understand that a tiny event multiplied in terms of its historical ripples can end up changing anything. Much as we understand that even in terms of physical effects, you can have very tiny changes in certain values that will make unbelievable differences. You know, the so-called butterfly effect is the cute way of putting it. You know, a butterfly flaps its wings in Africa, causes a hurricane over the Atlantic. I mean, that's not a stupid thing. It's true in a sense, in that things are so very delicately and carefully balanced with randomness that there's no way for us to really trace what it is that the impact of our actions, thoughts, events, and choices obviously are. So therefore, you take a look at yourself and you think you're dealing with nothing. But in fact, you're the only one that's really moving things here. I was thrown out until you came along, really. And therefore, I came now. That's how Chazal understood. Ani bati bidvarecha. So ani bati bidvarecha means that commitment to those 21 years is basically what you achieved connected to 21 years of Mochai Poras. Ubati la vincha et asher yikra lamcha ba'acharit hayamim. Oh, sorry. V'sar malchut, this is the, I said this because the Gemara says, but let's read it inside now. V'sar malchut paras omed l'negdi 21 yom. And there it is for those years, that entire time, of those 21 years, where Paras was attempting to control and prevent the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Of course, it was exactly what was going on during that whole period. V'nei Michael, achad ha'sarim ha'rishonim, one of the uppermost of the most chashuvim of the service later on that he's called, the one who is tining always for Yisrael, he comes to help me. V'ani notarti sham etzel malchei Paras, and I was left there to try to shut up malchei Paras. Batila vincha, and I've come now to explain to you. There's more to be understood here. Things that have not been explained to you. Things which will help you understand what is meant yet to come. And so as the Gemara continues, that after that, they let Gavriel back in. And he finds that petek that had been given over to the Tsar of Bavel, that had the rights to Yisrael, and the rights to the Karga, the rights to the Talmidei Chachamim, is, what did I say? I'm so sorry. Paras. So that is in his hands. So he tries to grab it from him. So he swallows it. So starts to chew it up. So some say that it was never signed because he needed to swallow it before it was signed. Others say it was signed, but as he was swallowing it, he messed up the signature. So that's why, says the Gemara, if you know today, if you'll see today, so many people reported from taxes. It's because that signature was like wiped up. So there are a lot of guys that could still get away with it because of this event. Thank you. Ubedabroi mikadvarima elan. When he spoke to me in these terms, because I thought I had basically gotten through most of this. This was shocking, because it's one thing to be looking at Tefillah as an Aveda, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu as responding to Tefillah, and so on. It's a totally different thing to be put into a position of responsibility in which you're actually playing Ender's game, you know? I mean, that is a shock. Like, I'm doing these little things, and I have no idea that this is galactic war, you know? I mean, it's basically what's happening with Malchei Paras. And so, when that took place, Natati Panay Arts, I gave up again and just fainted again. And I just went silent. So then he figured he better change the gestalt. I probably can't take too much of this. And so he takes on a more human kind of look. V'nei kidmut b'nei adam nogea al svatai. Try to get me to talk. There's this human figure that touches now my lips. V'eftach pi, and that makes me open up my mouth. V'adabra, and I speak. V'omra la omed l'negdi. And I say to whatever it was that was standing in front of me, Adoni b'mar anev chutz tzirai alai v'lo atzar tikach. Look, I really can't take this too much. These visions are tearing me to pieces. I just don't have any energy for this. V'eich yuchal eved Adoni zeh l'daber im Adoni zeh. Explain to me how someone like me, that can only imagine myself as like some type of lowly servant, something like yourself, whatever you are, how am I supposed to speak to you? That you're touching my lips. I mean, what am I supposed to say? Vani, I mean, if you're going to do this to me, me'ata lo yamod bikoach, v'nishamalo nisharim. I'm not gonna survive this. You're ripping me up. I can't catch my breath anymore. Vayosef, but he continues, Vayigabi Kemar Adam, this human like look touches me. Vayachaskeni, and he strengthens me. Vayomer, he says to me, Al tira ish hamudah. Don't be so afraid, you sweetheart. Shalom lach, chazak v'chazak. You're the one guy that has nothing to worry about around here. Just get stronger and stronger. And indeed, as he said that, I did feel stronger. And I said to him, okay, so now talk. I do feel stronger. So he said, so I understand why I'm here. He hasn't said anything. It's like the most amazing pasuk. But having gone through this, do you understand why I'm here? It's like a rhetorical question. And now that you understand, I'm going back to fight. And as I'm going out, and I was just finally getting recognized and getting some ashpa there in the Shemayim, and the way the Gemara puts it is, Vani Yotze V'nei Sar Yavan Ba. Avai, avai, oh no! And nobody paid any attention anymore. In other words, this was the maximum that I was able to do, was to make certain that during the time of the Malchei Paras, that there would be protection for the Jewish people. I was unable to extend that protection beyond into the times of the Greeks, which means you're going to have to fight your own battles. But the time of Porras, at least that time, was a period of relative peace. Even though we said that the Bayit was going to be Betsuka Itim, it was going to be very painful times, very tough times. But this period, your Taniyot, what it is that you achieved during this period, was enough to carry us through, and you gave me the energy to fight for these 21 years, and now you know what it is that you achieved. So stop being so frightened, and instead, keep working. V'inei sar yavan ba. And as the Gemara puts it, that's sort of the end of the story, in that from this point on, there's nothing that I can do, says Gavriel. And the lashon of the Gemara is, avei, avei v'lash, kebe, nobody paid any attention to him. Says whatever it was that he was trying to do and felt that he would still be able to translate the koach that he had been given from Daniel, it was completely useless against the sar of Yavan. Aval, agir lechat harashom bichtav. Now, if you take a look at the way the ta'amim are written here, and the correct way of reading this is agir lecha et harashom bichtav. I want to tell you that which was written in that ktav, which was the gezerah that I was referring to earlier, that there are things that had been determined in this Beit Din Shomala, all of that is emet. However, the way that the Gemara takes it, and this is both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, the Gemara darshans this as ktav emet, not harashom bichtav emet. So that both the Gemara Yevamos in the Bavli and the Gemara Yevamos in the Yerushalmi asks the question, what is that supposed to mean? Is there such a thing as a ktav that is not emet? From we're talking about a gezera in the Shamayim. So it's possible to be a ktav emet or not emet. So bichlal diikat ktav she'eno emet, asks the Gemara. So the Bavli answers that the difference is a gzar din sheyesh imo shvu'ah and a gzar din she'en imo shvu'ah, because we prove the benign the gzar din sheyesh imo shvu'ah she'enon mitkarea from the story of Beit Eli. Lekach nishbati the Beit Eli imitkaper avon Beit Eli mezevah v'mecha ad olam, which means that it's not arguable. So that the Yerushalmi talks about it differently, that the difference is if there was a chatimat gzardin, so then it's considered to be chtav emet. There's a lot of work among the Meforshim to put the two together, to make nafkaminas between Sibur and Yochid, that Beit Eli was a Yochid, therefore it had other dinim. That's not what is most important to us right here. What's important to us is that we break in the story for a moment, because he's about to say, "Agid lecha darashu bichtav emet." In other words, I want to tell you what seems to be unarguable with the issue of Chtav Emet. But now we break for a moment. Before I tell you this, you need to know that Ve'in Echad Mitchazek Imi Al Eile. There is nobody that is doing me any good at all when it comes to dealing with the events that are going to take place here, except for Ki'im Michael Sarchem. Now this Michael, until now, we didn't know exactly who he was. We did know, and many of the Mefarshim understand, that the relationship between Gavriel and Michael, from what we saw earlier, the first time that they manifest, is that Gavriel, as the Rambam explains, the different melachim are placed one under the other. There is a hierarchy, because since you're dealing with conceptual entities, they can't both occupy the same space, the same conceptual space, so they'd be the same thing. So there'd be no point in giving them different names. And therefore, if you're talking about different conceptual spaces, they must be nested. That's how the Rambam understands it, and because of that, you'll never find two things on exactly the same darga. So if that's the case, many learned that the way that Gavriel was appointed to be the expression of what Michael was attempting to communicate to Daniel implies that he is a manifestation of Michael, in which case they understand there is he's nested within that idea that we have of Michael. So that over here, the one who's mitchazek imi is actually the one who's ma'atzil kilonetzni shtal shalut of the world. That the only thing that I am able to utilize in my battle here in the Beit Din Shomala is the Sar Michael, who is now referred to as Sarchem. Now, in many, many places, the Rishonim, and there's, of course, Gemara's about it also, not as clear-cut, that there's no such thing as being dependent in a Sar when it comes to Yisrael. Asher Chilakti, that's Chilakti for all of the umais that live tachas Hashem, asher chalak lehem is the lashon. What's asher chalak lehem? Asher chalak lehem, they live, in fact, under a distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a reference also to Chutz La'aretz, but also to the relationship of God with the umais ha'elam. And there's therefore something in between. So it's always a malach in between. There's no direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to Yisrael, Yisrael is not tachat asar. We're not allowed, chas v'shalom, to daven to a malach and to ask malachim even to intercede. Many tear out those slichas to talk about the malach erachamim and say that they're kvira and they're ridiculous and you shouldn't say them and so on. But in any event, we need to understand what that would mean then in the context here of some kind of sar helping Daniel. What is that supposed to mean? And so the Medrash has a slightly different story to understand what this means about the Ktav Emet, which seems to be connected to here. This is in the Tanchum. The Tanchum has a Maisa where, and it's very interesting, because both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, what happens is that people come and ask this of someone. What could this possibly mean? And that someone never knows. And then that someone goes to somebody else, and that's, which is strange, because it's exactly what's happening in the Pasuk, right? So, in the Tanchum, we have the same thing. There was a Maisa of the Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who was going through now the Simunia, and this town. Yotzu Kol Bnei Ha'ir Likrato. Everybody comes out, and Bikshu Mimenu Zaken Echad, that is a Chacham, that is able to give them answers to their things. And Rabbi appoints. So he says, you could talk to Reb Levi Bar Sisi, who was a big Chacham. So they all tell Reb Levi Bar Sisi, what is the meaning of Daniel Agid Lechat HaRashum B'Ktav Emet? V'chiyesh Ktav Sheker, that you have to tell us Ktav Emet. V'lo Matzelem Tshuva Ma'ashima. Exactly the same story, and it's amazing. It has completely different names and in each one of these places, and it's always the same story, that the first person doesn't know, and he has to now go and access someone who does know. Now, it's very difficult to believe that's all that coincidental. Okay, so miyad yatzu misham, ubala lefnei rabo. Amarlo, he tells Rabbeinu HaKadosh, lo yacholti la'amad bifneihem. They asked me the first thing, and I don't know what I mean. I look like a total idiot. I'm not going back there. What was it that they asked you, Ma'aladaba? They asked me, what's the meaning of Ktav Emet? So he says, the difference is, Hayalacha, Teshuvah Gadol Hayalacha Lashivam. You should have told them a very important answer that would have changed their lives. What was that? That when Adam is Chotei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Roshem Alav, that's Ktav Roshum, V'Ktav Emet, Roshem Alav, a chiyuv of mita, im asa teshuva, a ktav mitbatel. So teshuva makes a ktav, eino emet. It's a completely different idea than the Gemara, and which has much more application. There's also a psikta that says the same thing, that is referenced to aseres yemei teshuva, and that's the whole thing. Rashum bichtav emet, adam chotei koyimot hashana. God's fed up with him already. Roshem alav kachatotav. Kivan shabah aser yimei teshuvah. And he's shav v'tshuvah harashum mitbatel. V'im lav haktav emet. So that's the ktav emet, which applies the ktav shek. And so the hava, which the Gemara brings out, is just the cry of pain at the hopelessness of meeting up with Yovan, is telling us here, according to this medrash, that it's only that which becomes manifest through the Aveda of Yisrael. And that's really the ideas the Gemara tells of Im Yisrael Oisim Tshuva Nigalim, Vim Einam Oisim Tshuva Einam Nigalim. And this now becomes, for the first time, what it is that Daniel finds out. Once it comes to Yavam, it's all up to you. And the only one that can do any good in the Shamayim is not the Tfilot, even if somebody as great as you, to help me, Gavriel. The only one that can make it possible for me to succeed is Michael Sarchem. And Michael Sarchem is the profound reality of the nature of Yisrael itself and what is achieved through the Teshuvat Yisrael. And so the Perek ends with a new sense of helplessness, but also with a new sense of hope.